Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 321, titled The Return of Il Duce, Part 2. This is directly supplemental to For the Record program number 307, The Return of Il Duce, about the election in 2001 of former Propaganda Due Lodge member Silvio Berlusconi to be Prime Minister of Italy. Berlusconi was Prime Minister in 1994, and as was the case then, one of his coalition partners is Gianfranco Fini, head of the Alleanza Nazionale, the Italian Fascist Party, and the direct successor to Mussolini's Fascisti. This is being recorded on August 12th of the year 2001. Not only has the memory of Italian fascism been, or not only has the reality of Italian fascism been to a certain extent politically resurrected in the physical persona of the Berlusconi government, but also the memory of Italian fascism is being rehabilitated to a certain extent as well. The last gasp of formal Italian fascism in the World War II period was something called the Salo Republic, which was a rump fascist state set up by the Nazis in northern Italy in 1943 after Mussolini himself was deposed and then rescued by the commandos of Otto Skorzeny. The Nazis then set up the Salo Republic in the city of Salo in northern Italy, and among the veterans of the Salo Republic was Licio Gelli of the P2 Lodge, a Masonic lodge that in effect served as a sort of a crypto-fascist government that steered Italy for much of the post-war period. One of the members of the P2 Lodge was Silvio Berlusconi, and the P2 Lodge itself was really more of a political entity than a Masonic lodge. We've dealt with the P2 Lodge at great length, including and especially in RFAs 17 through 21, number 19 in particular. The Salo Republic itself is being politically rehabilitated, or at least the memory of it is to a certain extent. A museum, I should say, is being set up to commemorate the Salo Republic. It is serving as something of a tourist attraction in the city of Salo itself, in northern Italy, and just as Italian fascism is being reworked and recirculated under Silvio Berlusconi, so too the memory of the Salo Republic to a certain extent is also being rehabilitated. That was the focal point of an article that appeared in the Financial Times of August 4th and August 5th of the year 2001. This is an article by John Lloyd. It's titled Marketing Mussolini, subtitled Italy's history is being let out of the bag as Salo, capital of the wartime republic, creates a memorial to the fascist era. John Lloyd finds the project aimed at tourists reflects new thinking about the nation's past. And I think this article is to be taken in the context of pro-fascist political and historical revisionism around the globe, ranging from Holocaust denial to the reworking of the memories of Japanese fascism in Japanese political textbooks to the rehabilitation of the memory of the Salo Republic, as we will read about. Talking about opposition on the part of not only local but federal, Italian federal center-left governments to the rehabilitation of the Salo Republic by commemorating a museum to it, the article reads as follows, skipping down. But the elections that swept the Berlusconi coalition to power in May also replaced the provincial leftists with rightists, and the project was through, meaning that it was gone through, not over. Continuing. Lombardy had agreed to fund the largest part of the modest starting costs, 70 million lira or 23,000 pounds, with a further 20 million lira from the province and 10 million lira from Salo. Salo will also provide accommodation, at first in a floor of the lovely Palazzo Fantoni, later a permanent home in a more contentious building, the former home of the Decima Mas, a semi-autonomous, ferociously fascist paramilitary group. Memories long calmed are going to be stirred into life once more. By the way, note Decima Mas here, or Decima Mas, perhaps, as it would be pronounced. That is more than a semi-autonomous paramilitary group. We're going to talk about the Decima Mas in a minute. Continuing. The project, in spite of the municipal leftists' hesitant consent, is being sucked into the raw and reopened debate in Italy of a past that still has the capacity to explode into contemporary politics. By the way, the term explode into contemporary politics has a perhaps unintended irony. We'll talk about that later in the program. Continuing. The decision of the little town of Salo, once it becomes real and tangible, will be taken as a sign of a much larger movement a movement to make comprehensible, even for some acceptable, the choice many Italians made in 1943 to stay loyal to fascism. Many in Italy certainly believe so. Paul Ginzburg, who holds a chair in contemporary history at Florence University and is a high-profile historian of the left, says, quote, "Now the center-right is in power, and there will be a huge pressure. This will be especially on the media and on schools to change the textbooks to construct different versions of key events in the past, fascism, the war, and communism. I don't think this will come from Berlusconi. He's not interested. But the Alleanza, the second party in government, has a real interest in a new history." And as noted in the past, that new history is being reworked in various countries, not just Italy. One of the most important texts about fascism was published in 1999 by Autonomo Media. It's a book that I've used many times in the past and whose author I've interviewed many times in the past. That book is called Dreamer of the Day, subtitled Francis Parker Yaki and the Postwar Fascist International, published in 1999 by Autonomo Media and authored by the brilliant Kevin Coogan. There are numerous interviews with Kevin Coogan about the book that are available from Spitfire. Many of those are streaming on the WFMU website, which, time permitting, I'll tell you about at the end of the program. Many others of those interviews, in fact, all of the rest of the interviews, are available for download on yet another WFMU website. Again, the book was published in softcover by Autonomo Media, copyright 1999, and there's discussion in a chapter called Strategy of Tension of the Decima Mas organization. Now, Decima Mas was alluded to in that article about the Salo Republic as a semi-autonomous paramilitary organization. That is not, strictly speaking, accurate. In fact, Decima Mas was arguably the most politically important, if not militarily important, formation of the Salo Republic. It was commanded by Prince Giusto Valerio Borghese, one of the prime movers of post-war Italian fascism, an associate of Otto Skorzeny of Odessa fame. What freelance Danish journalist Henrik Kruger alluded to as the Internationale Fascista was in many ways the brainchild of Borghese and Skorzeny, who worked together during World War II. And in the post-World War II period, much of the efforts of both men in the post-war period, in conjunction with elements of Western intelligence, including the CIA. The Decima Mas was initially the naval organization of Prince Borghese and ultimately an anti-partisan land-based unit. Of the Salo Republic and Prince Borghese and the Decima Mas, Kevin Coogan writes as follows in Dreamer of the Day. A modern condottieri, Borghese was one of Italy's most innovative and daring naval strategists and headed an elite naval sabotage unit called Decima Flottilla Mas or X-Mas during World War II. His use of midget submarines against the British caught the attention of Grand Admiral Karl Dönitz, who arranged for Borghese to train German naval sabotage units. After the collapse of Mussolini's government in 1943, Borghese's men continued to fight for Germany under the overall command of SS General Karl Wolff. By the way, he was Himmler's personal adjutant and the number two man in the SS. His unit now became a brutal, anti-partisan army that targeted the communist-dominated resistance movement in northern Italy. It also fought against American Rangers and Canadian troops on the Anzio Front. Decima Mas even had a spy outfit headquartered in Switzerland that worked closely with the SD. The SD is the Sicherheitsdienst. And that is what the Decima Mas was, really far more than a paramilitary semi-autonomous unit. It was, in fact, as I've indicated and as you just read there, arguably the most important military formation of the Salo Republic and one that worked with and under the command of Nazi Germany for much of the latter part of World War II. And again, it had an intelligence unit associated with the SD, the Sicherheitsdienst. There's a very important follow-up article on the Berlusconi government in the British anti-fascist publication The Searchlight, specifically in the Searchlight's issue of July of 2001. The Searchlight is not to be confused with the American Spotlight magazine, a similar title but ideologically opposed viewpoints. The Searchlight's website is at www.searchlightmagazineoneword.com. And in the July 2001 issue of the Searchlight, there's an article about Italy by Alfio Bernabe, and I may be mispronouncing that man's last name. It's called The New Italy, The Rise of Fascism Within and Without. Now, there are a number of very important elements in this article to take note of. First of all, there is a good thumbnail history of the Salo Republic. There is also discussion of a fellow named Mirko Tremaglia, who was actually a veteran of the Salo Republic and was appointed to a ministerial position by Silvio Berlusconi. There's also discussion of the Alleanza Nazionale, whose head, Gianfranco Fini, is the deputy premier and therefore could become prime minister of Italy if Berlusconi is ultimately ensnared and forced to resign because a number of legal problems, those legal problems have become more entangled in the wake of the G8 summit in Genoa and the street violence that occurred in connection with that. More about that later in the program. Note also the fascist makeup of many of the ministerial positions that Berlusconi has appointed. Once again, from the Searchlight of July of 2001, this article by Alfio Bernabe, The New Italy, The Rise of Fascism Within and Without. It reads in part as follows. A former soldier of Benito Mussolini's Nazi-fascist Salo Republic has become a minister in Silvio Berlusconi's government in Italy, in which members of the neo-fascist National Alliance and the xenophobic Northern League have taken key posts after the right's recent election victory. In the most right-wing coalition since 1946, when defeated Italy set up its first post-war government, the television tycoon is flanked by the descendants of the dictator's black shirts, and ministers who have been closely associated with the resurgence of fascism, racist policies, or religious fundamentalism. Should Berlusconi be forced to resign through the unresolved conflict of interest arising from his ownership of media interests, or through court actions in Italy and Spain pursuing a string of shady financial dealings, the likelihood is that Italy would find itself with Gianfranco Fini, the leader of the National Alliance, as prime minister. Fini has been confirmed as deputy premier and is therefore the virtual prime minister in waiting. He was for many years the favorite of Giorgio Almirante, the die-hard Nazi fascist leader of the Movimento Sociale Italiano, or MSI, the movement born from the ashes of Mussolini's Salo Republic, one of the darkest chapters in Italian history. Mussolini formed the puppet state in 1943 when, rescued by the Germans, he came under the direct control of Adolf Hitler. The headquarters were in Salo, northern Italy, which was in fact German territory. Soldiers of the Salo Republic were among the staunchest supporters of Nazism and fascism. Their task was to slaughter Italian partisans who were by then fighting in a bitter civil war to weaken the German army and the Italian blackshirts in order to help the Allied forces, which were slowly moving north to liberate the country. The elevation to the role of minister in Berlusconi's team of Mirko Tremaglia, Tremaglia, 75, described as a Salo Republic military protagonist who never sought to distance himself from his past, has provided the clearest indication of the degree of encouragement the newly formed government intends to give to the neo-fascists throughout Italy and the world. Tremaglia's main task will be to look after the interests of the many millions of Italians living abroad and may seek to revamp Mussolini's cherished ambition of the two Italies, one within the border and one abroad, acting in unison to form an internationalist fascist vanguard. By the way, in For the Record program number 38 called Il Martello, we dealt with the strong connections that Italian fascism had with various elements of officialdom in the United States in the 1920s, and in turn, the pressure that influence was able to bring to bear on anti-fascist Italians in the Italian emigre community in the United States. Continuing. The presence of Tremaglia and of so many cabinet ministers directly associated with fascism or neo-fascism, although widely expected after the election result, has outraged a number of Italian commentators. The list of ministers reads like a who's who of the neo-fascist or xenophobic tendencies. In addition to Fini, the others are mentioned here. The communication minister, Maurizio Gasparri, was the national president of both the neo-fascist Fronte della Gioventù, or Youth Front, and the Fondestra Universitaria, and joined the MSI when Fini became its leader in 1988. The environment minister is Altero Matteoli, who was also regional leader of the MSI. The agriculture minister, Giovanni Adamano, was a member of the MSI and secretary of the Youth Front. The minister in charge of devolution and social change is none other than Umberto Bossi of the xenophobic Lega Nord, the once separatist movement that over the years has done so much to ignite racist sentiments first against southern Italians and then against immigrants as a whole. Berlusconi may or may not have received direct advice from Henry Kissinger, who visited him while he was working on the formation of the new government. I would add parenthetically that with a number of different legal investigations that have been proceeding in Latin America, specifically in Argentina as well as in Spain, Henry Kissinger, the Operation Condor, which in turn overlapped the aforementioned Internacional Fascista, embracing people like Skorzeny, Borghese, Italian fascist elements that were working with elements of Western intelligence, and also the elder George Bush, who was director of the CIA during much of Operation Condor and the strategy of tension in Italy, with many of these events of the 1960s and 70s once again coming under scrutiny because of some legal investigations in Spain and Latin America, Henry Kissinger, a prime U.S. national security functionary in that period, would not be at all a disinterested individual. He has come under once again renewed public scrutiny in connection with his coziness with the Pinochet government in Chile. The Pinochet government was one of the primary elements of the Internacional Fascista, which embraced Latin American and European fascists. Returning once again to the Searchlight article from July of 2001 and skipping down, speaking of the strategy of tension that we spoke about in RFA 19 and numerous other broadcasts, a program of political terrorism in Italy that was designed to destabilize Italian democracy and drive Italy to the right politically, Bernabe writes as follows. These were piloted by whoever was behind Gladio and the P2 Masonic Lodge. References to Berlusconi l'Americano, spelt with a K in place of the C, have appeared in the Italian press, as has the term Biduista, applied to the current government and taken as an allusion to the P2, the so-called government within the government that was headed by Licio Gelli and listed the premier among its members. Gelli himself, by the way, an honored guest at Ronald Reagan's inauguration, was a veteran of the Salo Republic, and the P2 Lodge was deeply involved with the strategy of tension. And again, Silvio Berlusconi was a member of the P2 Lodge. A fellow named Philip Guarino, an Italian-American who was part of the American, the Republican Ethnic Outreach Committee, the fascist element in the Republican Party, about which we've spoken many times, was an honorary member of the P2. Now, note that in that article, it mentions that Gianfranco Fini is the deputy premier and poised to become prime minister if something happens to Berlusconi, if he's forced to resign because of a number of growing legal problems. Those legal problems were added to in the wake of the G8 summit in Genoa and some of the violence that occurred in connection with that. Interestingly enough, Gianfranco Fini and four of his ministers from the Alleanza Nazionale visited Carabinieri headquarters shortly before that violence, and in turn many of the Carabinieri themselves were observed to express pro-fascist sentiments in connection with arresting of the demonstrators and some of the people that were arrested in an evening raid that did not receive as much publicity, and some of the demonstrators were reportedly forced to say Viva il Duce, of course the popular nickname for Mussolini. The following comes from the Irish Times World News section of Wednesday, August 1st of the year 2001. There you can access their website at www.ireland.com/newspaper. This article is by Paddy Agnew, A-G-N-E-W. Its headline was Former Fascist Behind Genoa Crackdown, and the article reads in part as follows. Rome letter, quote, if you want to know just why the police decided to raid the Genoa Social Forum centers on the Saturday night, you should put that question to the Honorable Fini. The speaker is Vittorio Angioletto, spokesman for the Genoa Social Forum, or GSF, the main Italian pacifist anti-globalization movement. The Honorable Fini, unquote, is ex-fascist Alleanza Nazionale leader and current Deputy Prime Minister Gianfranco Fini. Skipping down. Consistent reports through the last week, however, that detained protesters were made to shout Viva il Duce and Uno, Due, Tre, Pinochet would suggest that elements in the security forces went beyond their brief. Was such behavior just the frustrated reaction of men who had been too long in the front line? Or was it the behavior of a police force keen to please its new right-wing masters? Quote, what was Deputy Prime Minister Fini doing at police headquarters in Genoa? What were four Alleanza Nazionale deputies doing in the Carabinieri operations room? Is there a link between these events and those shouting Viva il Duce or Viva Pinochet? Asked Democratic Left Party Whip and former House Speaker Luciano Violante in an interview in the Rome Daily La Repubblica yesterday. While the six current judicial investigations will doubtless throw light on many aspects of the Genoa violence, there remains the awkward question of political responsibility. The buck will clearly stop on the Prime Minister's desk, but is it a problem foisted on him by his Deputy Prime Minister? And that again from the Irish Times of August 1st, of the year 2001. Now, again, one cannot draw any hard conclusions from that, yet I think only an idiot would fail to ask the question about whether perhaps the actions of the Carabinieri were inflamed and perhaps to a certain extent motivated by, in turn, the actions and views of Gianfranco Fini and the four Alleanza Nazionale deputies who were in Carabinieri headquarters in Genoa. And I would also note in that context that Fini himself is poised to become a prime minister should Berlusconi be forced to resign. Now, as indicated in the Searchlight article from July of 2001, and this is readily verifiable from other sources, Gianfranco Fini, the head of the main Italian fascist party, is deputy premier or prime minister, and it might very well succeed Silvio Berlusconi if Berlusconi's legal problems should force him to resign. There are currently a number of investigations in Spain and elsewhere of some of Berlusconi's business dealings, which have come into question, and also with the violence at the G8 summit in Genoa, Berlusconi has also come under renewed criticism. One of the interesting factors, and as is often the case on this program, the following item is presented in interrogatory mode, not declarative. I'm wondering what, in fact, might lie behind the confluence of many of these events. I would note that some of the Alleanza Nazionale deputies are among those who have been calling for Berlusconi's political head, or at least putting pressure on him. That is a strange development, particularly in light of the fact that it was some of the Alleanza Nazionale personnel, including Fini, who were hobnobbing with the Carabinieri and, according to La Repubblica, were actually present at the headquarters of the Carabinieri in Genoa. Note the following from the New York Times of Wednesday, August 8th of the year 2001. This article, Dateline Rome, is by Melinda Henneberger, H-E-N-N-E-B-E-R-G-E-R. Its headline, Police Use of Force in Genoa Raises Outcry Weeks Later. And in this article, which is continued on page A8, we read the following, skipping down, quote, it is not possible that the head of government goes to Genoa four times and preoccupies himself only with flower pots, dirty laundry, and building facades, unquote, Domenico Fisichella, a senator of the far-right Alleanza Nazionale, said on Monday, referring to Mr. Berlusconi's comments before the summit meeting on unsightliness in Genoa. Who was taking care of the problems of public order? Who evaluated the impact? Why were necessary precautions not taken? It's too easy to liquidate a few functionaries and consider the question closed, unquote. And Domenico Fisichella is a primary functionary of post-war Italian fascism, currently a senator for the Alleanza Nazionale. One wonders, again, just what lies behind Fini's actions in connection with the Carabinieri, his visit to the Carabinieri headquarters, the presence of four Alianza Nazionale deputies in the Carabinieri headquarters, the performance of the Carabinieri, and then some of the criticism directed at Berlusconi from some of the Alianza Nazionale personnel. Again, one of the possibilities I wonder about is whether perhaps Berlusconi has been used as a stalking horse for the AN, and if in fact some of the violence in Genoa may ultimately lead to the resignation of Berlusconi. One wonders, and again, this is a question I'm asking, not a statement I'm making, whether perhaps that's just what the AN had in mind. Certainly, political violence in the streets of Italy is not something that should be viewed as a great surprise in light of the political heritage of the Berlusconi government, and that violence is apparently ongoing. Reading from the Financial Times of Friday, August 10th of 2001, an article by Joe Johnson in Rome headlined, Berlusconi defends call to move food summit, and skipping down, a bomb extensively damaged the courthouse in the northern Italian city of Venice early yesterday morning before a visit to the city by Mr. Berlusconi, Reuters reports from Venice. The Prime Minister called for calm, but described the bombing as, quote, a worrying escalation of violence, unquote. He said Italian institutions had become the target of what he called, quote, an international movement that was not born in Italy, but appears to have as its aim a fight against the Italian government, unquote. So who knows about that particular bomb in Italy? Who set it off and why? And I would note also that the Berlusconi government has, as part of its political coalition, a fellow named Pino Rauti, who himself was a veteran of the Salo Republic and also the founder of Ordine Nuovo, one of the most important post-war Italian fascist organizations, and an organization that was heavily involved in the strategy of tension and the Piazza Fontana bombing that we've spoken about in so many programs, including RFA 19. The Searchlight's issue of August of 2001 has a follow-up article on the Berlusconi government, that also by Alfio Barnibay. It's called A Long and Bloody Trail, and this deals with some of the information that we relayed in, among other programs, For the Record 307, that about three men convicted in connection with the Piazza Fontana massacre, a bombing in Milan in 1969, and these men were members of Ordine Nuovo. Skipping down in the article, speaking of the three men convicted in the strategy of tension bombing, the three convicted were leading members of Ordine Nuovo, one of the many fascist groups to which some current ministers in the Berlusconi government were also linked. Ordine Nuovo was formed by Pino Rauti, a leading fascist who at the general election in May made a political deal with Berlusconi to enable the latter to secure more seats in southern Italy. And of Pino Rauti and Ordine Nuovo and their role in the strategy of tension, Kevin Coogan writes as follows in Dreamer of the Day. And by the way, we touched on the subject of Rauti, Ordine Nuovo, the strategy of tension, and Prince Borghese of the Decima Mas in, among other broadcasts, For the Record program number 320. In turning to Dreamer of the Day by Kevin Coogan, of Pino Rauti and Ordine Nuovo and the strategy of tension, we read, speaking of the groups involved in that program, the most important of these groups was Giuseppe Pino Rauti's Ordine Nuovo, New Order or ON, which had split from the MSI after its 1956 Congress chanting, fewer double-breasted suits and more cudgels, unquote. Rauti's move was ideologically inspired by Evola, whom Rauti worshipped. Rauti also maintained close ties to Italian military intelligence. Organizations like Ordine Nuovo were regularly employed as street fighters against the left. They also engaged in bombings and killings and helped create a popular climate for more repressive measures against, quote, anarchy, unquote, from either the right or left, a kind of political yin-yang that justified the flourishing of the secret state. As part of the strategy of tension, rightist operatives and police agents used left and anarchist groups that they had created or legitimate sects that had been infiltrated. So, again, the events in Italy should not come as a great surprise. I've alluded to other tapes and CDs. Those are available from a tape duplication service called Spitfire. You can reach them at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. Email them at mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com, and visit their Real Audio Equipped website at www.spitfirelist.com. Sister station WFMU-FM is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent programs are streaming at WFMU.org/Dave Emery, one word. Older programs are available for download at archive.wfmu.org/archive/D/X/. That concludes For the Record program number 321. This is being recorded on August 12th of 2001. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.